This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. We switch topics, and Kevin Cook is with us, former senior editor at Sports Illustrated. He's written for the New York Times, for GQ's, the Smithsonian, and many other publications, and his latest work is 10 Innings at Wrigley, the wildest ball game ever with baseball on the brink. It was 40 years ago today, Wrigley Field, the Philadelphia Phillies of 1979 against the Chicago Cubs, the Phillies with the game's best player at that time, Mike Schmidt, and the game's most celebrated player in Pete Rose, who had just signed a free agent contract. They invade Wrigley Field with a record of 23-10. The Cubs were 16-15, and what happened that day is symbolic not only for what happened on the field, but many other subtopics that are covered in 10 innings at Wrigley. And good morning to you, Kevin Cook.
Morning, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing well. Well, how did you get this idea? It is an interesting concept.
Well, this game has been talked about for a long time among Cubs fans and Phillies fans and the players. Took place at such an interesting time that I was drawn to the idea that 1979 was the year that the Cubs were first put on the superstation on WGN. Cable TV was brand new. In this year, you've got 80,000 cable households around the country. That'll soon be 800,000, and 10 years later, it's 53 million. That's going to turn the game around. It also turned the Chicago Cubs into a national brand. Also did the same thing with the Braves, who were also in the superstation then. That's going to change the game enormously. Also, the players were terrifically skinny. I think fans who look at YouTube games from 1979 will be surprised. Weight training wasn't in. Of course, it was too early for steroids, so that hadn't happened yet either. And also, modern metrics, all the analytics that are going to revolutionize the game are brand new at that time as well. Also, it's a great cast of characters, so I was drawn to this crazy bunch of Dave Kingman and Bill Buckner in the Cubs clubhouse. Bruce Sutter is their Hall of Fame closer, who's just discovered a lethal new pitch, the split-finger fastball. You mentioned Pete Rose, the most colorful player in the game, unless it was Tug McGraw or Larry Boa, his teammates. Mike Schmidt was the best player. You've got a remarkable cast of characters and the wind blowing out of Wrigley Field at 30 miles an hour. It's hard to beat that combination.
And these two teams, 4 years earlier, had played an 18-16 game in which Schmidt hit four home runs. His rival was Dave Kingman, who, of course, had enormous power and hit three home runs on May 17, 1979. And after three innings, the Phillies led 15-6. It looked like a rout was in store, but there was a different story.
Well, and there were some very unfortunate fans who left when it was 15-6, thinking, here's just another Cubs loss, and they're going to miss a game that will soon become legendary.
Well, the Cubs ended up tying it 22-22 in the seventh inning. And no runs were scored in the eighth. And then in the top of the ninth with Bruce Sutter, the Cubs Hall of Fame pitcher, facing Hall of Famer Mike Schmidt, 3-2 count, what happens?
Well, they've already walked Schmidt before. And one thing that's happening is while the pitch is actually on its way to Schmidt, you've got fans screaming, walk him, don't pitch to the man. He hits a ball that didn't need the 30-mile-an-hour wind to put the Phillies ahead. You're right that we had a couple of scoreless innings, which kind of shocked the fans. Fans were thinking, you know, they're used to getting seven or eight runs scored in an inning. Suddenly there's a scoreless inning. I spoke to one who was there in the bleachers, and she said, well, at least it stayed exciting because a trash truck going by on Wayland Avenue right behind the stadium burst into flames. So this game is going to be interesting no matter what. And you do wind up with the fireworks, courtesy of Mike Schmidt, in the 10th inning.
You mentioned this was before the steroid era, but the Phillies got exposed for using amphetamines. Lots of players, not Schmidt, but Pete Rose apparently was really doing the greenies heavily.
Well, there were a lot of players who were, and this was, as you say, steroids really just a rumor at this point, but greenies, amphetamine pills, pep pills, had been popular for many years, and the baseball schedule is grueling, particularly for the Cubs in those days, because they're the ones who have to change their rhythm constantly. You're playing night games almost exclusively on the road. You come home and you only play day games. I did catch up to them in the middle of hot Midwestern summer times. The greenies that were tremendously popular, not every player used them, but quite a few did, and the Phillies were caught getting some illicit prescriptions for amphetamines. It seems almost innocent in light of the performance-enhancing drugs that came later, that was the scandal it was in 1970, in the late 70s and early 80s.
Well, the game was 40 years ago today at Wrigley Field. 10 innings at Wrigley is Kevin Cook's book. And it was a game of the ages, and it was symbolic of the times. And for those who were there, they recall it as though it were yesterday. The voice, listener asked about the voice of the Cubs at that time. It was not Harry Carey. It was Jack Brickhouse. But
that's right.
He was the first voice on WGN when the Cubs went national. And, of course, the Phillies' voice was Richie Ashburn, a Hall of Fame outfielder. The game had a lot of characters, as you say. Tug McGraw, for example, the Phillies reliever, who just got bombed when he came in that particular game. But for the most part, he was an effective relief pitcher, as we know, for the Phillies and the Mets. He, of course, fathered a child out of wedlock when he was in Jacksonville, Florida in 1966, and that child became Tim McGraw. But what a character Tug McGraw was.
He sure was, and he was sitting in the bullpen down the right field line at Wrigley Field early in the game, watching balls fly over the wall, and thinking to himself, I need to get in this game and stop the nonsense. So once he goes into the game, he immediately gives up four runs, and his catcher, Bob Boone, comes out to him with a big smile on his face, and McGraw says, what's so funny? Bob Boone says, well, I've got a three-run homer, and you are in the middle of the blank. So they were enjoying themselves, even though Tug's earned run average went from the low ones into the fours mm-hmm. that day. And when he finally trudged off the mound, the Cubs fans give him a standing ovation, and he smiled and tipped his cap.
And the Cubs had two players who in 1986 were involved in plays that changed their lives dramatically, one tragically, Bill Buckner and Donnie Moore.
That's right. That's another instance of how these paths crossed in such interesting ways. I think so much about baseball, so much of the interest in baseball has to do with the many connections. They go not from just one game through one season, through careers, and even through generations of players. Not long after this game, 7 years after this game, Donnie Moore has gone from really just a name in the bullpen to an elite relief pitcher, making $1 million a year. He was an all-star for the Angels. He was fighting injuries, gave up an epic home run to Dave Henderson in the American League Championship playoff. The first baseman for the Red Sox in that game is Bill Buckner. Of course, he and Moore are former teammates with the Cubs. Buckner goes on in a very short order in that same postseason to make the epic error that would forever define him. And Mookie Wilson's ground ball goes between his legs. And Bill Buckner had a fine and long career, one of the best hitters in the game, but he would be remembered just for that one play. Moore goes on to a much nastier and tragic finish when he tries to shoot his wife. He was an abusive husband. He was a very troubled man. She survived. One of the delights of working on 10 innings at Wrigley was speaking to their daughter, who remembered some good times that Donnie Moore had when her dad, the famous ball player, would come to the grade school for show and tell. So it's good to feel some sort of redemption that there were great moments even for the ones who had bad endings.
Well, George Will says, a magnificent Hall of Fame caliber addition to baseball literature, 10 innings at Wrigley. And a listener asked about Pete Rose, who had signed before the 79 season, a free agent deal with the Phillies. It was a record deal. What did he make? I think it was $800,000 a year. The unheard of sum.
That's right. impossible money, $800,000 a year. Dave Parker was also making that, so they were kind of tied that year as the highest paid players, but Rose was the highest paid free agent. He was supposed to come and lead the Phillies to the World Series, which he did not do that year, but wait another year, and the Phillies are finally going to get there. All of that was starting to happen in this year, 1979. Rose came from Cincinnati, where, of course, they were accustomed to winning, and found a culture that he wasn't immediately so impressed by. He said, I'd run out and on the field before the inning began and be ready to throw some balls around the infield, and nobody else is out there. I'm standing there waiting for them. Rose was as hard-nosed as ever. He is a very divisive figure in baseball history. There are questions about his Hall of Fame candidacy. It's interesting that when he was betting on baseball, he was a manager. I don't think anyone ever considered Pete Rose a Hall of Fame manager. But he was a great player and is a great person to talk to as far as a remarkable memory for particular pitches, particular counts in a game that happened 40 years ago today.
Well, thank you, Kevin Cook. Congratulations on 10 innings at Wrigley, 23-22 on this date in 1979. Phillies over the Cubs. On this date in 1936, Dennis Hopper was born. He filmed Easy Rider with Peter Fonda and Jack Nicholson in Louisiana 50 years ago. 83 years ago he was born. He died at 74 in 2010. We'll be back Monday. Stay tuned.